Today, we will have a discussion on sex patterns, sexual behavior, unisexuality, and reversal of sex. So we first go to the sex patterns. Animals can be generally categorized into two: hermaphrodites and gonochorites, depending upon their sex pattern. So first we will go to the hermaphrodite organisms. They are also said to be monoecious or bisexual. So in hermaphroditism, both sexes will be seen in the same organism. Second one is gonochoritism. Gonochorites are also said to be unisexual or dioecious. In them, the sexes will be separate. There will be separate male organism and separate female organism. So we will go to the examples. Hermaphroditism is seen. The best classical example we take as earthworm. Earthworms are hermaphrodites in which the organism carries both the male and the female sex organs. Tapeworms are hermaphrodites. So most of the organisms who belong to the phyla, Cnidaria, Platyhelminthes, etc. are hermaphrodites, and some annelids like earthworms are also hermaphroditic. Now gonochoritism. When you start from Ashelminthes, most of the organisms up to Chordata are gonochorites. That means they have separate males and females. That is why they are said to be unisexual. That means there will be only one sex in one organism. It will be either male or female. Or they are said to be dioecious. That means they are showing separate sexes. So arthropods, chordates, they will be generally gonochoritic. They will be having separate sexes. And this condition usually starts from phylum Ashelminthes. But when you come to Annelida, you can see that the earthworms are hermaphrodites, but Neris is a gonochorite. Hermaphroditism is usually characteristic of organisms which are either sluggish or who are having an attached mode of life. So they cannot move around in search of mate. The earthworms, the tapeworms, slugs, land snails, flatworms, barnacles, sea squirts, etc. are examples of hermaphrodites. So they will be having ovaries as well as testes, which produce sperms, which produce eggs as well as sperms. In most of them, the eggs and sperms are produced at the same time, but in some it will differ. So in organisms who are hermaphrodites, you can see both self-fertilization as well as cross-fertilization. In self-fertilization, the eggs or ova produced by that organism will be fertilized by the sperms produced by the same organism. Whereas in cross-fertilization, the eggs produced by one organism will be fertilized by the sperms produced by the other organism. So that is called cross-fertilization. So in hermaphrodites themselves, you can see self-fertilizing organisms like tapeworms and cross-fertilizing organisms such as earthworms. In unisexual organisms, each organism is either a male or a female. So their reproductive behaviors will also be different. The males will have one pattern of reproductive behavior and the females will have another type of reproductive behavior. And they have to synchronize and then they have to come together. They have to either mate or shed sperms and ovum to the medium, and fertilization thereby occurs. Now we come to the sexual behavior. So the behavioral patterns which are adapted by an organism during the mating, it is called as sexual behavior. It can be competition between males. It can be certain display behavior shown by males, courtship behavior, etc. So in most of the organisms, the sexual behavior is seasonal because the sexual reproduction is also seasonal in them. You take the example of many non-human mammals. You can see that their sexual reproduction takes place in certain seasons. In some of them, reproduction takes place only once a year. In some of them, twice a year, like dogs, or many times a year, like horse, etc. or rodents, etc. But in them, the sexual behavior is usually seasonal. So their sexual patterns, I mean the courtship behavior, the sex drive, all will show certain seasonal patterns. In the case of non-human mammals, there will be a period which is called as estrus or fertile period, during which there will be development of the ovaries, and it is during this period that the females, they show a period which is called as the period of heat, during which they are receptive to the males. So such reproduction is called as seasonal or rhythmic. That means they are receptive for mating only during certain seasons. So why is it so? Why is it seasonal? Because they are adjusting the time in such a way that the fertilization, the development, the hatching or the bringing forth of the offspring takes place in optimum conditions. So to ensure this, they are doing seasonal mating. So this will ensure safety while mating and the launching of new generation at a time or season when the circumstances are most favorable. We can take the examples of birds who lay eggs in early spring, and there are many mammals who also deliver their young ones in early spring. So this is a time when the months ahead are warm and they get plenty of food. So that is why they synchronize the their breeding behavior with a pattern in which the young ones they prop up during the early spring season. So among the mammals also, you can see that the gestation period or the period of development of the young one within the uterus of the female, it varies. It can be less than 3 weeks or it can be many months. So that differs, and in most of them, time of birth will be the spring season. But the gestation periods will differ, but it is adjusted in such a way that the young ones, they come out in the most favorable season. In elephant, the gestation period is 617 days on an average. In horse, it is 336 days on an average. In sperm whale, it is about 535 days on an average. In deer, it is 201. So likewise, the gestation periods vary in different types of organisms. And in horse and the great whales, they will mate in spring, and they also ensure that the young ones are delivered in spring. Whereas in certain organisms like roe deer, mating occurs in summer and delivery occurs in the spring. In some organisms, the mating occurs at a convenient time, eggs are getting fertilized, but development is suspended for a certain period of time so that hatching or birthing, it takes place when the circumstances are favorable. So all this kind of mating behavior is regulated with the help of hormones, the sex hormones which are produced by the gonads, the female hormones produced by the ovaries and the male hormones produced by the testes. So they maintain the growth and also the development of the sex organs, as well as the production of secondary sexual characteristics which are associated with their mating behavior. And the production of these hormones is in turn under the control of the pituitary gland. The pituitary produces certain hormones which will further influence the ovary or the testis to produce their respective hormones. And these hormones, they will maintain the growth of the sexual tissues. So in short, the male and female sex hormones are produced by the ovaries and testis, and their activities in turn under the influence of the pituitary. And in many organisms such as frogs, reptiles, birds, mammals, etc., the activity of the pituitary is influenced by a certain external stimuli like light. So in most organisms, the pituitary is responsive to the increasing period of daylight. That is, you take the case of certain frogs. So in response to the increasing daylight, the female frog's body get packed with eggs. And the male frogs, they start croaking to attract the females. And in reptiles also, you can see such phenomenon. In mammals also, with increasing daylight, the pituitary senses this. It influences the gonads, and there will be overproduction of sex hormones, and the female comes into the heat period. The uterus starts the preparatory changes for taking care of the fertilized eggs, and the male is also in sexual drive. But as the daylight, the length of the day ceases to decrease, the sexual drive slowly diminishes. So, the mating behavior of many organisms is influenced by certain external factors which influence the pituitary gland, which in turn influences the gonads, which will cause the production of sex hormones. Now, we will come to the four basic systems of sex pattern in organisms. They are monogamy, polygyny, polyandry, and polygyny. So we will first broadly classify it into monogamy and polygamy. In monogamy, during the mating season, there will be a pair which will consist of only one female and one male. So they form a mating pair. That means a male will exclusively mate with a female. That is what is called as monogamy. So such a phenomenon can be seen in birds such as pigeon. What is polygamy? In polygamy, a male can mate with many females, or a female can mate with many males, or many males mate with many females. So that is called as polygamy. Polygamy is of three types: polygyny, polyandry, and polygynandry. In polygyny, a single male will mate with many females. You can see it in horses, lions, etc. In polyandry, a single female can form pairs with many males. That is called polyandry. Then polygyny, multiple females can form pairs with multiple males. It is seen in chimpanzee, herring fish, etc. So polygyny, one male and many females, horse, lion, etc. Polyandry, one female, many males, angler fishes are examples. And polygyny, many females and many males together form mating pairs. Chimpanzee, herring fishes, etc. are examples. Now we come to sex reversal. Sex reversal is a process that changes the sexual identity of an individual from one sex to the other. Some organisms change sex from female to male and back again once or twice a year. So we will go to certain examples. First one, the most classical example of sex reversal takes place in a bird which is called as cruise hen. So it is an organism, it's a hen that was discovered by Crewe in 1923, where a functional female changes into a functional male. Usually in birds, there will be only one functional gonad. So it is an adaptation for weight reduction to facilitate flight in birds. So usually birds have only one functional ovary, that is the left ovary. So that develops into a normal functional ovary. The other ovary will remain rudimentary. If the functional ovary of that in hen, if the functional ovary of the hen is destroyed, then what happens? The rudimentary ovary develops into a testis. So here, the female sex is reversed into male sex. Such a hen is called as Crewe's hen, and this is a classical example of sex reversal. And this male, which is now developing from a female through sex reversal, is fully functional and it is even capable of fertilizing the eggs produced by the hen. So in birds, the type of sex determination is ZW type of sex determination, where the female is heterogametic and the male is homogametic. So the birds are, the hen is ZW. And this ZW genotype of the female, it will stimulate the pituitary gland to produce female hormones. And these female hormones cause the single gonad of the hen to develop into an ovary. So, because of the ZW type of genotype, the single ovary develops into, or the single gonad develops into a functional ovary.
the other will remain rudimentary. In males, it is ZZ type of sex determination. So, this genotype suppresses the gonad to develop into an ovary. So, ZW causes the gonad to develop into an ovary. After ovarian development, the pituitary stops producing female hormones because the female hormones produced by the ovary itself blocks the pituitary. So, it's a kind of feedback mechanism. So, in the body of this organism, there will be high level of female hormones which are produced by the ovary. And this high level of female hormones will suppress the action of male hormones producing cells of the body, because in every organism there is the adrenal cortex gland which can produce some amount of male hormones and some amount of female hormones. So in the body of a female there will be some male sex hormone producing cells, and in the body of a female there will be some male sex hormone producing cells. So in the body of male there will be some female sex hormone producing cells, and in the body of female there will be some male sex hormone producing cells in the adrenal gland. But in hen, the male sex hormone producing cells of the adrenal gland are suppressed because of the high levels of female hormones produced by the ovary. But when this functional ovary is destroyed, the amount of female sex hormones or the concentration of female sex hormones in the body reduces. Now the male sex hormone producing cells of the adrenal gland become active and they produce large amount of male sex hormones. The concentration increases and these male sex hormones will influence the rudimentary gonad to develop into a testis. Now once the testis is produced, the testis starts producing more male sex hormones. And finally, the hen reverses its sex into a male. In goby fishes, also you can see such phenomenon. That is, in them, you can see protogyny as well as protrandry. What is protogyny? In protogyny, the organism is initially female, but it reverses to male. In protrandry, the organism is initially male but reverses to female. So first we will go to the protogynous changes. That is, initial female changes into male. So this usually occurs when the resident male of the group is dead. If there is no male in the group, reproduction will become impossible. So in that condition, the dominant female will turn into male and this will allow mating to occur. Such type of protogynous changes are not only seen in goby fishes, but they are also seen in other fishes such as wrasses, damsel fishes, sea basses, etc. So this is a classical example of protogyny, where an initially female organism reverses its sex into a male organism. Now we will go to protrandry in goby fishes. Here, male changes to a female. So here, during mating, the female gobies always prefer larger males. And there will be few larger males with large abdomen. And these larger males, they have the monopoly of mating with multiple females. So, in a reproductive group, the female gobies will always prefer larger males. So what happens? The small males will lose their chance to mate. So they have only two options left behind. One option is that they can become sneakers. That means they will sneak around in the breeding ground where the large males are selected by the females. So they will just sneak around there and they will wait there near the spawning ground of the paired fishes, and they also release their sperms on the spawning ground as soon as the paired female releases her eggs. So they will just wait for the paired female to release her eggs, and the sneaking small males will also release their sperms. Most of the eggs produced by the females will be fertilized by the sperms produced by the large male, but at least some eggs will be
fertilized by the sperms which are produced by the sneaking small males. So that is one of their options. At least some of their sperms can go into the next generation. So what happens? The large male which was paired with the female, it cannot distinguish the eggs fertilized by the sneakers from those fertilized by his own sperms. So without knowing which are the fertilized eggs that got fertilized by his sperms, he will give equal parental care to all the eggs. So this is one of the options preferred by the small males to ensure that their sperms also get into the next generation. Their genotype also gets into the next generation. So that is one of the options that is preferred by the small males in mating groups of goby fishes. Whereas they have got the second option. Instead of doing all this sneaking, they will choose to transform into females. Because females have high mating opportunities, because the large male will mate with many females. So, in a population, the most of the females are having high mating opportunities. So, rather than remaining as small ones which do sneaking, they will prefer to become females. So, once they turn into females, it is ensured that the large males will come and mate with them. So, the eggs produced by them will be fertilized by the sperms produced by the large male. So, here, this is actually an option or a chance event. That means this male, the small male gobies will either prefer to be sneakers, which will wait and release their sperms and waiting for their sperms to fertilize the eggs and waiting for the large male to take care of these fertilized eggs. Or they have the second option that they will turn into females. So once they become females, the males will come and mate with them, and their eggs will go to the next generation. So they are making it sure that they produce young ones of their own genotype. So here you can see that there is male to female reversal as well as female to male reversal in goby fishes. There is a species of goby which is called Gobiodon histrio, which is seen in the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. It exhibits bidirectional sex changes. That means it can change the sex in both ways. Suppose two males, they change into females and they get isolated. So what happens? One of them will again change back into a male goby. So consider two males which have reversed their sex into females under certain circumstances, and they got isolated in a particular coral. There is no chance of reproduction now because both of them have transformed into females and they got isolated. In that condition, one of them will prefer to change its sex back to a male. So now they can form a mating pair. So this is what is called as sex reversal. These are some of the classical examples of sex reversal. But this phenomenon can also be seen in certain amphibians, where temperature induces sex reversal. But this can be seen only in a sensitive period during development, where the temperature influences the sex of the tadpole. So this is seen only in a thermosensitive period, not always. Some steroids can also reverse sex in amphibians. In reptiles also, temperature-induced sex reversal can be seen in certain species such as the central bearded dragon, the eastern three-lined skink, etc. In a few domesticated mammals also, the sex reversal phenomenon is seen.